Thomas Sharp's a bad guy.
Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Thomas Sharp is probably the ultimate Mormon villain, but I think most Mormons don't even know who he is. In our next conversation, Brian Stutzman will give us a little bit of a short biography on Thomas Sharp, the real anti-Mormon, the one who incited the mob to kill Joseph Smith. Check out our conversation.
So I've talked a little bit about Thomas Sharp. Okay. I'd like to tell you, because in our conversations earlier, you said, let's talk a little bit about Thomas Sharp. Okay.
Right.
Thomas Sharp came from a Methodist family. In England in the late 1700s, John and Charles Wesley started the Methodist movement. And one of their earliest and strongest disciples was a guy named Thomas Coke. And he lived in England and he came to America and he was teaching people about Methodism. And a guy named Solomon Sharp and his wife Jemima Sharp, they were adherents, and he became a minister in the Methodist church. And he hung out with Thomas Coke quite a bit. And he was really influenced by Thomas Coke from England. And so when they had their son, they named their son Thomas Coke Sharp. And Thomas Coke Sharp grew up and he went to law school in Pennsylvania. And I haven't really found the reason, but he ended up in Warsaw, Illinois. Okay. This is about 1840. And we see pencil drawings, charcoal drawings of this older gentleman. Well, Thomas Sharp was 22 years old when he came to Warsaw in 1840, so he's a rather young man. And he tries his hand at the newspaper business with a partner named James Gamble. And they spend 6 months about down on the river at the foot of Maine. And then they move their press and change the name from the Western World to the Warsaw Signal. And they go up to an unknown location up on Main Street. Now, some of the tour buses stop and point to a building at 204 Main. It's a sixplex, and say, this is where Thomas Sharp published. Well, that building wasn't built till 1851, way after. Thomas Sharp published there, but it was after the Mormon period. So Thomas Sharp publishes his newspaper, and when
the newspaper was called the Warsaw Signal, right?
It changed from Western World to Warsaw Signal. Now, it changed a few times in the 1840s, and different people came in, including Thomas Gregg, who wrote the 1880 Hancock history, the history of Hancock County. So it changed a few things. So for all practical purposes in my book, I just called it the Warsaw Signal, but it did change them, you know, three or four different names, and it changed hands real quick. Because Thomas Sharp found that in 1840, he couldn't make it as a newspaper man. And he went to farming and he gave back the newspaper. But in 1842, he marries money. He marries Hannah Wilcox, one of the most wealthiest brides-to-be. Right, because she's a widow of John Wilcox, who had all this land and property and ferry and whatever. So, you know, you can marry more in a minute than you can make in a lifetime. That's Thomas Sharp's. So the money allowed him to get back in the newspaper business because he wasn't making it on his own. So he's living off Hannah, publishing, get back in the newspaper business. But the turning point, and a guy named Marshall wrote a paper called The Turning Point of Thomas Sharp. And there's some discrepancy over some of the facts here. But when they set the cornerstone for the Nauvoo Temple in April 6 of 1841, Joseph Smith had a table up front for the dignitaries. And some of the dignitaries, one of them was Chief Keokuk from Iowa, who the town is named after. And he was up at the front table. And he invited young Thomas Sharp, again, 22, 23 years old, to be up at the head table with him. And they had this big feast and a military parade. And they set the cornerstone for the Nauvoo Temple.
So at this time, Thomas is still friendly.
Yeah, neutral at best, you know, neutral or friendly. And sometime after, now people speculate that day he turned against the church. There's a young historian, and she's come to my house with me and my wife, and we've done some history, Brooke LaFarre, and she was at BYU, now she's studying at Utah, University of Utah, and she has found research that it was a while later before Sharp turned negative. So there was a time where he was friendly, and then he turned negative. Okay. So he goes up there, and he starts writing terrible things in his paper. There was a term in that area about Masons, okay? If you were not a Mason, but you were friendly to the Masons, there was a term called Jack Mason.
Oh, really?
Well, he coined the term Jack Mormon.
Oh, I
Thomas Sharp coined the turn Jack Mormon.
See, I could have sworn there was a guy in Missouri. I'm trying to remember what his name was. It wasn't Thomas Kane. Galland. Something like that. But he was the guy who turned the Jack. He was a Jack Mormon.
Well, the evidence, the papers that I've researched in private libraries and things, it's Thomas Sharp coined the term. And what it meant at the time was somebody who, today it basically means that it's somebody who's a member of the church that isn't living the teachings. But back then it meant somebody who was friendly toward the church. In fact, they just called him Jack. So you had Mormons and Jacks. They didn't use the term Jack Mormons. It was just Jacks. And so the county commissioners were not Mormons, but they were Jacks. They were friendly toward the Mormons. They supported the Mormon side. Okay. Thomas Sharp sitting there seeing this block voting going on up in Nauvoo. And he gathers, and the two main political parties at the time were Democrats and Whigs. Okay. And he says to his fellow people, fellow residents, he says, we don't have a shot in heck of getting somebody elected unless we join together, put our differences aside, and maybe we can get somebody elected locally. So he and Aldrich, again, these are two guys that stood trial, and a guy named William Roosevelt. Now, William Roosevelt was the cousin to Teddy Roosevelt's father.
Hmm.
Okay, and they're living in Warsaw, and they get together and they create this political party. In 1841, it's called the Anti-Mormon Political Party. Now, it wasn't a mob, it wasn't hostile, at least at first, but it was a political party to try to outvote the Mormons. Okay. Well, in 1842, Thomas Sharp decides to run for state legislature, a seat in the state legislature. Well, who was he opposed by? The prophet's little brother, William Smith. And William Smith beats him. In 1844, when Joseph Smith was running for president, Thomas Sharp talks about running for the United States Senate. And then he learns that Hiram Smith, the prophet's brother, was considering running for the same seat in the United States Senate, and Sharp withdrew. Okay, so you've got Sharp coining that, Jack Mormon, you've got Sharp involved with the Anti-Mormon Political Party. Things get really, really bad. Sharp gets bolder and bolder. There's meetings in Warsaw and in Carthage, public meetings, and they debate and talk about how to get rid of Joseph Smith. The Hancock County Committee of Vigilance, I think it was called, Vigilance and Safety, has open meetings, and they determine that they're just not going to kidnap Joseph Smith, so maybe they should shoot him.
Oh my goodness.
This is a public meeting. These are American citizens talking about other American citizens. If we did that today, we'd be in jail.
Yeah.
So Thomas Sharp goes so far as to write in his paper later on. He says, we wouldn't be surprised to hear of the murder of Joseph Smith. It's right in this newspaper. You write that today about somebody. Okay.
Wow. So, the frontier justice.
Joseph wrote in his journal one time, he says, seems like Sharp, I mentioned he was a stalker. He says, seems like Sharp spends his whole life trying to discredit us through lies and misinformation.
Mm-hmm. So we don't really know what turned him.
What turned
him? Something. He's sort of friendly in 1841. He was the brother-in-law of who again?
Isaac Gallen.
Isaac Gallen, who was
Mormon missionary.
Mormon missionary.
Now, Isaac did turn away from the church later on. He went out to Kirtland and out east to gather money to build the Nauvoo Temple, and he came back and he didn't turn in any money to the church, and he kind of left.
But there was a little bit of an economic rivalry between Warsaw and Nauvoo.
Huge.
It sounds like, and huge. So that's probably. I mean, would if we were guessing, would it be best to say that it was these economic issues that probably turned him off, and then, well, economic and religious?
Yeah, I think religion plays a, I think the Latter-day Saint perspective is that it was all religious, and John Hollis's Cultures in Conflict says it was economic and political. I think it was kind of in the middle.
Okay.
There's two viewpoints. Now, as we study LDS history, we always hear about the LDS stories and the side, but we don't hear the Warsaw side. And so I did some research. I included, for instance, in 1841, Joseph Smith got really fed up with Thomas Sharp. And he writes, he says, "Mr. Sharp, where, you know, please discontinue my subscription to your newspaper," and he calls it a tissue of lies and, you know, all these negative things. And he says, "P.S., please publish this in your newspaper." And we read that, but we don't read Thomas Sharp's response. Thomas Sharp published that. And then he wrote underneath, he says, you know, I'm paraphrasing, "I'm happy to do it, but you'd better make sure your subscription's paid in full or I'll send a profit after you mightier than now." So he had all these comebacks, and we don't see those.
Well, and I know when you study the martyrdom of Joseph, there's a lot of back and forth between the Warsaw Signal and Joseph Smith. So, yeah.
Thomas Sharp complained about block voting. Says it's not right. You guys will never be able to live. The reason the Mormons, and he writes this, and I got the quote, "The reason the Mormons and the non-Mormons can't live together is the Mormons are ruled by their religious leader with a despotic sway," is the term he used.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hiram Smith wrote back and he says, "Mr. Warsaw Signal, we will vote for whoever we want." And Sharp publishes both sides in his paper as well as in all the papers, publish it in their side. So I found it very intriguing. So we had this buildup to the martyrdom. Tensions get bad. We know about the expositor, right?
Mm-hmm.
June 10th.
Actually, give us a little background on expositor for some people who might not know.
There's some people in Nauvoo that get disfranchised. I don't know the term to use exactly. They weren't very happy with what was going on with the church, and they decide to secede from the church. And they were going to start an organization called the Reformed Mormon Church. And Thomas Sharp's just all over this, and he's writing about the Cedars, not the Six Cedars, but the Cedars, he calls them. He says, "The Mormons are at it amongst themselves again." He says, "We hear that they're breaking away. Some of the smartest, most intelligent members of the church."
Well, it included the first presidency, William Law.
William Law, he was going to be their new prophet. And he says, "This new group, creed doesn't differ too much from the main Mormon church. They believe in the authority," and he uses the word authority. They believe in the authority of the Book of Mormon, the Doctrine and Covenants, etc. They even believe Joseph Smith was a prophet, but is no longer a prophet, a fallen prophet. Their new prophet is William Law, and he publishes this in his newspaper. Well, about 200 people, whether Mormons, non-Mormons, ex-Mormons, they kind of get together. They have a few meetings. They're going to start this Reformed Mormon Church in Nauvoo, and they raise money and they get a press. And they publish the newspaper, I want to say about June 10th. June 10th is the date, 1844, where they publish the first, maybe it's a little earlier. No, it's a little earlier, June 7th, I think, is they actually published the expositor. And it was laced with half-truths, some truths. They call out Joseph Smith and his polygamy.
Which was pretty explosive at the time.
Very explosive, especially to people in Warsaw. How could any person be doing this?
Because they were still pretty secretive about the practice of polygamy.
They were, and we're not even quite sure what polygamy looked like in 1844. There's no records. Was it just ceilings? Was it consummated marriages? I have the opinion that it's mostly just ceilings like baptisms.
Well, I know Brian Hale says that he thinks that there were some sexual relations involved as well.
However.
And we also have...
There's no offspring.
There are no offspring.
Zero.
Yeah, and we've talked about that with Hugo Prego. But the other thing that I just do want to mention really quickly was Oliver Cowdery referred to
Fanny
Alger, or Alger, I guess. I don't know how you say it anymore. But of a dirty, nasty, filthy affair. So,
well, I've heard that the word affair was added later. That they
I'm trying to get Don Bradley on, because he says it's a scrape. I don't know
right.
what the
meaning of the word significance or 1836 or whatever it was.
At any rate, because they did talk about adultery, and the
topic is there's certainly experts on it, and I have my own opinion, mm-hmm. but it was an explosive topic. But I think the problem with the expositor was that they called for the repeal of the Nauvoo Charter. And they openly invited mobs to attack Nauvoo. And so the city council in Nauvoo met for 3 days and debated. And they felt that within the law at the time, they could put an end to this public nuisance. I've heard scholars later opine that said, well, they had that right, but they should have just locked up the press and things. But instead, they went out and destroyed the press. Okay, they threw it in the street.
Well, but that was pretty common. I know
it was. We had our own press.
We had our press destroyed in Missouri.
And it happened up and down the Mississippi Valley.
Well, and there was an abolitionist newspaper that had its press destroyed. So none of these, I would say, were legal options. And in Nauvoo, I guess it's a little different because they said, okay, it's a public nuisance. We're going to destroy the press. But it was fairly common in the 1800s for presses to be destroyed.
Yep.
Not necessarily a legal thing, but yeah.
They felt that they were within the law as they understood it. And so they ordered the sheriff to come out, and it was a very organized and civil destruction. Okay. Joseph Smith wasn't there, but he took the brunt of it. Everything flowed to Joseph.
Because by now, John C. Bennett had been excommunicated, and Joseph was mayor of Nauvoo. Right?
And the people who left the church would make a beeline to Warsaw. And Thomas Sharp would print anything, whether it was true or not. You had Joseph Jackson, the villainy of Mormonism. Sharp would print it at his press in between newspaper runs, books. There was a couple other people that came down. John Bennett came down, and Thomas Sharp wasn't too interested in printing too much of his stuff. John Bennett went on a kind of a nationwide tour, and it kind of fizzled, exposing the villainies of Mormonism. But after the press was destroyed, that was June 10th, the next morning, Charles Foster, who was one of the ringleaders, there was the laws of Higbee's and Charles Foster, two Higbee's, two laws, and Charles Foster was the ringleader of this Reformed Mormon church. He makes a beeline to Warsaw. And he writes this letter, and Thomas Sharp publishes it the next day, June 12th, 1844. And he says, "Mr. Sharp, I regret to inform you of this great injustice that's just happened in Nauvoo." And he goes on to describe, and he doesn't describe it right. He says, "This mob of 200 people came and destroyed our property. And can you stand by? We plead unto the citizens to compensate us, help us out. We've been wronged by these Mormons." And he gets a lot of facts right, wrong, excuse me. It's very inflated, kind of a Victorian prose type flair to it, where it's National Enquirer times 10. And Thomas Sharp publishes an extra the next day, June 12th. And he publishes Charles Foster's letter about this terrible thing that's happened with the Nauvoo Expositor. And underneath, Thomas Sharp adds a big paragraph, and he says, "You know, fellow citizens, can we stand by and let, you know, this," well, Foster calls Joseph Smith a wretched prophet or something, uses some really bad terms. And Thomas Sharp writes and says, "Can we stand by and let this injustice go? We need to gather up. We have no time for anybody to make comment. Let's make our comment with powder and ball." That's the quote. That was a call to arms to come up and say that there's something wrong in Nauvoo, and we need, and it's all Joseph Smith, even though it all pointed to Joseph Smith. And they were angry. So we don't necessarily ever read Charles Foster's letter that's published in the Warsaw Signal in traditional church history books. And so I felt it was very important that I include that in my work. I found it very interesting. So people are starting to figure this out, that Joseph leaves for Montrose. He's scared for his life. He knows that the heat is on him, not necessarily the church. And then they come back, you know, the letter about, why are you abandoning the saints? And, you know, he says, "If my life's of no value to my friends, it's no value to me." He was trying to do the saints a favor, because he knew that everybody was writing about Joseph and not about necessarily the saints. He's carrying about 70% of the local hatred, and he figured that would follow with him. So there's definitely some interesting things that happen with the trial.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with author Brian Stutzman. In our next conversation, we'll talk about the trial of Joseph and Hiram's murderers. Who were the people that actually stood trial for this?
So you got five defendants. You've got Jacob Davis, who was a school teacher. You've got Mark Aldridge, who declared bankruptcy because Joseph wouldn't buy his land. You got Thomas Sharp, the anti-Mormon newspaper. You got Levi Williams and William Grover.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please support Gospel Tangents and become a subscriber. For just $5 a month, go to patreon.com/gospeltangents and you can hear the entire interview. And you can also get transcripts available at either our Amazon website, or if you want to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website at gospeltangents.com and you can click the yellow subscribe button. Of course, we're also on Facebook, Twitter, and all the other places. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And don't forget to click here to subscribe on YouTube, here for a transcript. And over here, we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again for listening.